You're listening to Counterculture on RCR.
Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio. Oh, we've had a week off.
Yeah.
Back in the hot seat with Martin Gibson here with Media Matters. I know it's you have a detox for a whole week and then the retox. It's a hard landing, Martin, a real hard landing.
I expect to come back, you know, with a big store of stuff to talk about, but I have to spend a lot of time retoxing. And
I totally detoxed the week I was away, got home on the weekend, picked the papers up. I was struggling to find really much.
Well, you know, I've recently re-engaged with X, what is now X, what was Twitter, and I just find it superior in terms of analysis, in terms of the voices you can tune into, in terms of how unfiltered it is. And I find what it does is it makes me, when I have to, you know, contrasting the commentary about the assassination attempt on Donald Trump, contrasting these Navy SEALs and specialist snipers saying this just wouldn't happen. Something's badly wrong here. This person had help, with the insipid commentary from New Zealand's media, or, you know, in the case of Stuff running Democrat Party lines about it being a conspiracy that Trump faked his own assassination attempt.
I'm sorry, when you see the angers, I mean, obviously everyone has caught up with the news of the assassination attempt. I couldn't believe it when it broke on Sunday. But as you, when you see those angles of how close he came to getting a bullet in the head, which was literally millimetres, there's no way on earth that that was faked.
Yeah, well, I mean, the fact someone behind him died.
I know. Yeah. And that's I wondered about tragic. That because
I didn't understand the angles at first. You know, I sort of just saw the people behind him kind of seem to not move. And I thought, you know, if there's that many bullets going into that crowd, how come people aren't?
Well, and the fact that eight went into that crowd, one man was tragically killed, two others are in critical condition. It's amazing that more weren't killed, to be brutally honest with you, because, yeah, the angle went straight past him into the crowd.
Yeah.
But it just showed up so many ineptitudes. It showed up.
Well, that's the best case scenario. That's the best case scenario, that it was ineptitude. Worst case scenario, they've tried defamation. They've tried lawfare. Tucker Carlson said it. Alex Jones, you know, who's...
I think Mike Benz even talked about it.
Yeah, Benz talked about it. Like, and, you know, there was another thing I was watching. You know, they could have given Kennedy something to mimic a heart attack. They blew his brains out as a message to anyone who wanted to talk about the government regaining control of the money from the Federal Reserve. It's like, yeah, you could try that, but it's not going to end well for you.
And I see, as an aside, Mayorkas has now finally relented and given Bobby Kennedy protection in light of the attempt on
as that should have been a bigger story. It should have been a story. So, yeah, the insipid coverage by New Zealand's media just brings home to me how much I just despise. They've come to despise them. They must know they're lying by now. And I guess, you know, there's 80% of people, that's just fine.
I made a point of watching One News that night to see what was there. The only thing I could pull out of it was is they actually called it an assassination attempt.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, at least you got that part right.
You know, Trump falls down at rally. There's some loud, mystifying bangs heard.
Yeah. So, of course, the other thing that's just happened, the Republican convention is now on, and that's in Milwaukee, and he announced yesterday J.D. Vance as his running mate, which I know from my perspective, I was actually really pleased to see that. I've got a soft spot for J.D. Vance. He's a young veteran. He's a writer. He's come from rural Ohio. He is not a political native. He is that part of that red centre.
Yeah, he's come from Hillbilly, Kentucky.
Yeah, well, he wrote a book. He's famous. If the name sort of kind of seems vaguely familiar for people, he wrote a book called Hillbilly Elegy, which was a best-selling book that then became a movie.
And you know the weirdest thing? I watched it at the weekend. I had no idea that he was...
Yeah, that's the story.
He was the JD who was in running to be vice presidential. Well, I was going to say vice president because... Barring another crack at it, which, you know, I don't know that they're going to get another crack at it, although again, there's talk of truck bombs, plane, you know, they're seriously wanting him out. They don't want a second President Trump.
I tell you what, it did take something major, though, to get Biden's gaffes out of the front head of the news cycle in the US. This did it, I guess. I mean, Biden has what did he call it? The big boy speech in NATO really was very lukewarm. It was a sort of a toddler, to be honest. And then after the Trump assassination attempt, he then came out condemning and saying this is not what we expect in the United States. And he's saying, I've just had a briefing from Homeless Security. Maybe they will be homeless after these
things,
this.
We settle these things at the battle box. It's amazing. And you know, again, this is the contrast between X and New Zealand's media. There were just all of these wonderful mashups of all of these incitements to violence from Democrats. We didn't have cities burning down during the lawfare or the verdict against Trump. There's an evil in that more government, less freedom camp.
And then finally, the Florida decision as well that got thrown out, and the illegal appointment of the prosecutor. And, you know, that's now all been tossed out. So it's been it's been a good week for Trump in the sense that he is still above ground. And I will be wondering, will there be a Reagan effect? Do you think that there will be a Reagan effect?
I think there will. I think he had an epiphany lying on the ground with his ear bleeding. You know, he could have come out and been, and there's, you know, again, some great comedy, you know. they can shoot. That bullet, and it was made in China, by the way. Doesn't work. I make great bullets, okay? But he didn't, and Americans are much more comfortable talking about God and angels, and, you know, he had God on his side. And I've had people say that to me after I've had narrow scrapes with death, and I say, well, you know, what do I say if I didn't have such a good outcome that God hated me and wanted me to die? It's something Kiwis are probably a little more cautious about. I mean, you know, the commentary from a lot of pretty ghetto black guys has been hilarious as well. It's like, he's our man. Got shot, did the black power fist up, walked off like a man, you know?
Yeah. The other aspect too is there's been a lot of commentators that prior to the weekend, were predicting that July 15 US time, which was yesterday, that they were going to make an announcement, the Democrats were. So if there was going to be a shuffling with Joe Biden, that's when it was going to happen. And the logic they were predicting behind this was to take the wind out of the Republican National Congress sails and the VP announcement and all that kind of stuff. So I think the whole plan was that it was like, yes, and I think they were aiming for that Jacinda moment. I really do. I think they were, the plan was to have, yeah, but then it's not going to happen now. I mean, they can't do that now. I mean, this has come completely out of left field, I think. I don't think that there was any great conspiracy there. I think this poor young man, I mean, what was he, 20? This poor young man has been weaponized by all this crap in social media. You see this with these kids, they get sucked into it. I think this poor kid has been completely mind-raped, basically.
There are a lot of kids who have been, as you say, really messed up in terms of just driven to nihilism by, well, the idea that the world's going to burn in 10 years that they've had in school, and that Trump's the next Hitler, and he's going to, you know, I mean, Biden himself, as I said, some of these mashups of things he's been saying, he'll be disastrous for the country. He will destroy our democracy as we know it. He's the, you know, he's Hitler. The aggregate of he's Hitler quotes. And, you know, then again, beautiful satire where they've taken, you know, one wag took all of the various messages of, oh, get well soon, Trump, change Trump to Hitler. You know, oh, such a terrible thing that someone tried to kill Hitler. It does raise the question, well, which is it?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Are you really sorry that he almost got killed?
Yeah. I'm going to be talking to Trevor Loudon in a couple of days.
And ooh, I am. Always look forward to those.
Yeah. We reached out to see if we could grab him because I've got a sneaking suspicion he could be at the conference. So I'm dying to hear what he has to say. Dying to hear what he has to say. So it will most likely either go out, depending because of the time I've got to catch him to record, it won't make the show this week, but I'll either slip it into breakfast or give it to the social media team, and we may actually put it out straight out on
It needs to come out straight away.
Yeah, and I'll slip it into the show the following week. But it is, I'm dying to hear what Trev's got to say on this, because he predicted, I mean, I spoke to him, several months ago, and he said there will be something that will happen leading into the election that will be a pivot point. And I think this was the pivot point. It was the pivot point that missed, and I think it's going to actually bite them in the bum. So
yeah, I mean, you've got to be mindful that there is a tendency to jump to when you don't have all of the information. You've got to be careful not to too quickly draw conclusions. I think there's a fair bit to play on that young man on the roof, the police being told. He pointed a gun at a cop as he was getting on the roof, and Trump wasn't taken off stage, you know.
They've all got radio.
That ain't right.
Exactly. Well, we'll have to wait and see.
If the guy who took the shot has a car accident or commits suicide, you know, that's not going to help matters either. But I would be a bit worried if I were him.
Indeed. So speaking of, you know, political drama, let's talk about the fact that both Winnie and Luxon are away at the moment. So of course, were they still in the US when this happened, or they may have just popped off to Japan, but they've certainly been over there with NATO. I mean, good grief. I mean, Luxon looked like that little kid. This is going to sound so awful, but he looked like that little kid from Charlie and the Chocolate Factor, you know, Augustus Gloop.
Augustus
Gloop. He was so excited to be in the field where he had the chocolate lake, and he was always super excited. And that, to me, that's what Luxon looked like. He was so excited to be around the big boys and in the big boys club, finally.
You know what? It occurred to me as I was reading about a lot of the stuff and watching him with his little batting helmet on, and that was a good, you know, well done. He'd be pretty chuffed to have smacked every ball. As Gavin Newsom said, you know, we've seen a lot of people with ties on try and do that. No one's hit everyone. That's an impressive athletic feat. You know what I thought about Luxon was he's going to do really well overseas as the little brother, you know, as this little excitable guy from a little excitable country. Well, I'm not always excitable, but, you know, from a country that a lot of people have got a fair bit of goodwill toward, he'll probably do quite well representing us overseas, even though he does cozy up to, you know, the worst of the corporate neo-feudalist one world government people, because he's a bit, he's all in on it, and I don't think he's got much of a moral compass. So yeah, he does a lot better in that role, the excitable school kid hopping from foot to foot with excitement and friendliness, and you know, he's a self-described extrovert. I think people are more comfortable with that than they are with him being the actual leader of the country. Because it does feel like David Brent's the prime minister when you see it from the other side.
I think you're completely on the money there. My concern with that internationally is he going to be the one, whether it be Five Eyes or Wherefore, wherever it may be.
World War III.
Yeah, where they go, look, we need to run this thought balloon up. We need to test this out. Who can we? We'll ring Christopher. Hey, Chris, we've got this idea. Do you want to run this up and see how it plays out in New Zealand first? And it'd be, you know, there's only 5.5 million in the bottom of the wheel. Collateral damage. Won't worry about that. That's what I worry about.
Yeah. Give your central bank digital currencies a go. See how they go. And you know, just start some of these controls, and then, you know, you've de-armed everyone, so it's not going to be dangerous.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I think they will look at us as this lovely little insular petri dish, political petri dish, and they'll think, oh, and that concerns me. And he will be so eager, I mean, to please. And as opposed to Jacinda's narcissistic, I mean, she claimed she had, what did she call it?
Imposter syndrome.
You whiner. I think he will be like, big me. That's what I think.
Well, I always like Olivia Pearson's very dry, you know, there's a good reason people have imposter syndrome. I don't know. I mean, he's an inside guy. I don't see him as particular. You know, National would be great to see them doing what it says on the box a bit more.
The one thing, of course, they didn't report about, which we know would have happened, and there was actually one article in the paper that was kind of, obviously, they were trying to fill the page, that around Winston Peters while he was away. But the one thing we do know while Winston is away is he can be an irascible old donkey while he's here in New Zealand. When he's on the international stage, he is respected, he knows his shit. He knows the important people to talk to. He knows the connections that need to be made. He's old school and he is tireless in the work that he's going to do. There's been no talk of that. If you didn't realise, he was on the trip. And I think Winston likes it that way. I think he's quite happy to court the media in New Zealand, but he's quite happy to get on with the job when he's out of town.
You could also add to that he's patriotic.
Mm.
You know, I do believe he's a patriot. He speaks with a view to what he wants, the effect he wants to have through what he says, and the effect he wants to have in terms of his speech with the media is he wants people to think that he doesn't care what the media say about him, and he knows that plays well to his brand. Actually, his the New Zealand First East Coast chairperson said to me once, and this isn't a badge of honour for most journalists, but said to me that he said I was one of the few New Zealand journalists who gave him a fair go. I wrote up a meeting that he had. And there was an actual moment that I did think of adding into the story, which was a gotcha moment for him, and I didn't. So he said, well, I better get moving. It's a long drive out through the gorge. And as he was going past, and I was sort of out the front door by that stage, he walked past and he said, how long does it take to get to the airport? If you're a journalist who wants a gotcha or you want to poke him, you know, sure, I include that. But I was more interested in what he was saying about the East Coast.
Well, that's the thing that worries me now with a lot of news going digital, right, is that unlike the old format, I mean, you and I, primarily what people may not understand, being the Gen X dinosaurs that we are, is that we actually make a point of buying the hard copy newspapers to go through when we do this. So unlike the clickbait that you see, and we look at digital medium as well, but unlike the clickbait where they want those gotchas because the gotchas get them the clicks, that doesn't translate out in broadsheet the same way.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you can flesh things out more. But then there are also parties where, you know, they just create their own clickbait. I mean, the Greens, good night. Could it get any worse? I think Cam summed it up beautifully in the Political Agenda on Friday, where he said with Chloe's, you know, he gave credit where it's due. I think it was him where he said Chloe, was it Annie, that handled her first really sticky press conference over the Darlene Tanner incident relatively well. But as Cam said, she put the mental and environmental. She's the far out. And I think put a massive spotlight on how being as opposed to a conviction party, which is what they were when Jeanette Fitzsimons and Rob Donald, you know, did their own little walker jump back in the day, and to create the party, they've become an ideological party.
Yeah, well, they become radical communists.
Yeah, that too.
rather than earnest environmentalists. And earnest environmentalists, I mean, David Longy's immortal quote about Jeanette Fitzsimons, she grows garden herbs in her own manure. You know, that idea that they somehow were aloof from the filth of politics because they cared so much.
Well, what will be interesting now, of course, is that they're in a sticky wicket where the walker jumping legislation, which, to be fair, has only been used once, since it's been around, and it's had a couple of iterations since then. It's only ever been used once. They didn't use it with Kerikeri. I can't see them using it with Tana. She's going to dig her toes in. She's going to sit on that backbench, sucking in for, what, another 2.5 years?
Yeah, rationalising about why it's important for her to be there. I mean, you know, the other thing that was great on that, and if you haven't caught it, I always say Cam Slater's The Crunch is the best New Zealand political journalism.
Matt McCartan?
Yep, his interview with Matt McCartan. Really interesting on that.
So I will preface that, if you go to listen to that, because I actually listened to that last night, the sound quality at the beginning is a bit crunchy.
Yeah.
But do work through it. It improves as it goes on. Matt's microphone was awful. But Oh, I was just transfixed with that.
Mm. Even if you don't agree with him, I didn't agree with him on everything. I don't agree with him that RFK Jr. is crazy. I think that's a bit lazy.
That was the bit that got my heckles up, but yeah. But it was interesting, his mindset, though, as someone who comes from that deep sort of centre-left.
Machiavellian.
Even for him, he was like, oh, these guys are fucking.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my peculiarity is that I've always been worried about having my working class credentials. So I've done a lot of crappy jobs, and I understand the challenges that low wage people face. I'm sympathetic to them, and I'm always interested in, well, how do you improve life for people who maybe are low skilled or didn't do well at school or aren't paid much? And it's annoyed me as much as anything, just seeing Labour taken over by academics and identity politics, you know, and really have left behind those people.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you talked to Rachel Stewart. I didn't realise until one of the interviews that I did with her that she ran for Labour when she was a train driver. She was one of, I think she's New Zealand's first
female train driver.
She was one of New Zealand's first female train drivers. And she ran. And, you know, those were the sorts of candidates that they had back in the day. I had a soft spot for Janet Mackey for many years because she was that old school sort of electoral candidate. You know, she did a lot.
She did the grind. She totally won that seat because she knocked on doors. I cleaned a pool once when I was 14 in Speedos and she sat drinking a cocktail watching me. It was a formative experience.
I could imagine. But, you know, Janet was old school. She was approachable. She was in her office more than she wasn't in her office, unlike many electorate MPs. So, you know, there was a reason why she held that seat for, what, three cycles, four cycles? It was a long time.
Yeah.
I think Heather Duplessis-Allen summed up the Greens situation quite well in her column, because she said the modern Greens can hardly do exactly that, meaning kick Tana out of Parliament for becoming inconvenient for them, because that is exactly what she has become. By going independent, she takes away from the Greens some of their parliamentary budget and questions. And I think this scandal has been the scandal. I mean, they've had lots of skirmishes and there's been a few crosswinds for them since the election. But I think this particular scandal is going to knock a lot of wind out of their sails. I think they'll potentially need to sit on those crossbenches and lick their wounds a little bit. And obviously she's going to dig in. I don't think she's going anywhere. They're going to lose a little bit more clout while she sits there taking up a seat.
Yeah. Heather Duplessis-Allen's point about the Waka jumping bill and what's wrong with it was well made as well. She said, we have become so used to the modern way that parliamentary parties whip their MPs into doing exactly what they're told, especially in New Zealand with its small and controllable parliament, that we've forgotten our history. That's not how Westminster democracy started. It used to be that parliament was made up of elected MPs who were all independents and loyal only to the towns, suburbs and regions that voted them in. As time went on, they grouped themselves into parties, but even then those arrangements were loose and independent thought was tolerated. I am wholly in agreement with that.
No, and you're right. And you probably wouldn't have seen it, but there was a full page article, deep article, around the whole Swiss Canton system. And did you know that Luxon, when he was with Air New Zealand in 2018, went over with Oliver Hartwich of the New Zealand Initiative and Winaday, and they checked that whole thing out, that whole localism system out?
Yeah, no, it was interesting, wasn't it?
That, yeah, because I know you're very fond of that system.
Yeah, I am. And I mean, you know, again, Cam's objection is that we don't have the same people as Switzerland does, but to a certain extent, you know, there is some entrenched culture in it, but I think we could be aspirational toward more representative democracy and certainly more localism.
Well, speaking of localism, let's jump to your patch of the woods.
Jump down to Shane Tupo.
Yeah. Yeah, because Tauranga is about to vote. I mean, you're there. What's the feeling? Yeah. What's the mood?
I think people are braced for the coming rates rises. They're seeing, you know, just it's not unlike much of New Zealand, all of these roundabouts and jutta bars sprouting up and speed restrictions and You know, I was driving down Papamoa Beach Road the other day, and there was a big traffic hold up in the oncoming traffic with a group of lycra clad cyclists riding two abreast. And I looked to my left and there's this empty asphalt cycle lane. So, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, there's been, what is it, $22 million a kilometre in Wellington? It's probably not unlike that there. They didn't do their foundation work right and maybe tried to cut a few corners, so it's already cracking. But there have been some really interesting interviews Paul Brennan's done with local mayoral candidates, and it spells out, you know, what Antolli's been doing at $1,800 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
The debt they've been running up, the rates rises that are heading our way, and I think a lot of people are just braced for that. And I think there is a general feeling that it was a bit of a rum do, old Nanaia Mohuta suspending the council.
I really couldn't believe it. I had to read it twice when Shane Tupou said, talking about Antolli, I think the commissioners actually did a decent job on a hard wicket with big increases in investment in roads, water infrastructure and amenities. Did you see that on the ground, Marty, or did you just see cones?
Well, yeah, I think it remains to be seen, and it speaks to an authoritarian impulse that is present in the left. It was interesting him saying, growing up in Kawaru, I remember travelling to Tauranga as a little boy. My family would describe it as the Pākehā city. My elders would tell us stories of Gate Pā and the treatment of local iwi. Bad stuff happened there, we were told. There is a different vibe here in terms of Māori. Māori are a lot sort of quieter and sadder in Tauranga.
Well, it was interesting that Shane Tupou actually did say that it was, what did he call it, the least diverse of New Zealand's major cities.
There is that conservative, you know, element that Māori justifiably get a bit pissed off at, of white folks who hold Māori in contempt and refuse to entertain the idea of pronouncing words properly, or, you know, and really are just happy that they won. And of course, the tribes here were really smashed after the Gate Pā incident, which, you know, to be balanced, they did say, come and fight us here. They, you know, as I've said before, they did.
Actually, you referenced that in a previous show, didn't you, from a documentary that you saw,
They kind of messed around with the British Army and got their butts handed to them. There is that tendency to judge past times by modern mores. But, yeah, it'd be nice to see if there are a way of building bridges with the people here.
So of the contenders, who stands out for you?
I wouldn't at this stage be able to make an informed enough statement about that. I think Mahi Drysdale is fitting the usual way that mayors get elected in Tauranga, which is that property developers and the extremely wealthy town fathers decide who's going to be mayor. I've been told that's how it used to work out. I'll come back to you on that. But, you know, as I said, if you were wondering, and I've been talking to RCR about getting them all collated into one place, because there's some great interviews that Paul's done with the candidates. If you want to find out, I'd recommend you listen to them.
Just sticking with local politics, Andrea Vance was obviously not on the junket into the States because she was quite busy locally, and she's been covering the Manurewa Marae scandal, and part of that was actually with the local body and trust board elections, and it looks like there's a new allegation that's cropping up around that. It's not going away for Manurewa Marae and by extension to Party Māori. So you've got the Greens, who have, as you said, the hardcore Marxist ideologue activists on one side, and then you've got Te Party Māori, who are the full-on ethno-nationalists who have been putting the Māo into Māori from their politics.
Yeah.
It is, wow.
I mean, their angle is, hey, it's that Marxist, the end justifies the means, the upturned fist, you know? We've been oppressed, so whatever we do, just like children, we can't be held accountable for it. Look what you made me do, as Taylor Swift said. John Tamihere is on tape on that Zoom call video saying as much. it's probably illegal, but, you know, they've been disadvantaging us for so long that it's only fair. I think it's really important that they are held to account by, again, this is where the gap in New Zealand's media, the lily-livered cowardice at actually asking those guys real questions. And I know you were watching that video with Debbie Nareopaka, which was actually, you know, one of the more insistent interviews that I've seen them face with Jack Tame, who could have gone further. What I've said in the past is, you know, ask them what they want. Ask them what they'd do if they had the power to do it. What would New Zealand look like? Would it look like warlords with you in charge as rangatiratanga and, you know, overseeing and, you know, patronizingly guiding the lives of your commoners or tutua, with non-Māori taxpayers being the taurekareka or slaves? I suspect that that's exactly the way they think it should go.
Mm. Well, I mean, if in terms of hyperbolic statements, firstly, the first hyperbolic statement was a visual one. If you watch the video, she had singularly the largest panamu tiki around her neck that, I mean, I would hate to pay for her chiropractor appointments. I just put that out there. So that's the first visual hyperbolic moment. And then verbal diarrhea started. I mean, to have a grandstand view of the inside of your own anus. She has a stadium view, does Debbie Nareopaka. And Jack did push her on some of these hyperbolic statements. She was not going to be drawn on it. There is a genocide. They're trying to exterminate us. What else was in there? I mean,
It was shocking. It's nonsense, but, you know, that's the advantage of having a poorly educated group of puppies that you can raise squealer-like to be attack dogs. That's what they're doing.
And that's what worries me is because, you know, I mean, Professor Elizabeth Rauter must be sitting there shaking her head because she founded that Kohanga Reo system. It was an amazing education system. It's produced some wonderful intellects and minds. And now it just seems to be, as you say, a squealer-like puppy factory for Te Pāti Māori as their activist arm. And I think that's really sad. It's really, really sad.
I think of them as dangerous. I mean, it's easy to look at them playing dress up, and Jack Tame said to her, you know, what are you doing here to, you know, these statements you're making saying that this government's trying to exterminate Māori are not really going to be bringing the people of Aotearoa together, are they? And she said, well, anyone who's inflamed by those statements are probably not tangata tiriti. And he said, well, who are they then? And she said, they probably need to ask themselves that. And, you know, that speaks to that suspicion I've got that John Tamihere's trip to China maybe had something to do with that, because if you want to make New Zealand into a client state, you'd soften it up by saying that the majority of the population aren't here legitimately. That sort of takes the fight out of people. Mm. And, you know, Māori art, once they've been used for that purpose, will end up being Ngāti Uyghur, you know, like the useful idiots that they're being, causing this kind of division, seemingly willing on civil war. And Tākuta Ferris, I think, is, you know, he is the squealer in this. You know, he talks about the Kohanga generation. You know, like they might not, their uncle might not recognize their politics. It's pure Maoist revolutionary stuff. They don't hide it.
Oh no, not at all, not at all. And it will be, you know, where is the end point for all of this? That's what I sort of wonder. And in terms of, you know, they talk about the poverty gap and how much Māori are missing out. And what no one talks about is the have and have nots within Māoridom. Where is the trickle down? Where is the trickle down of the millions, the tens of millions of dollars that went into the Waiparaita Trust out to the people in that community? Where is the trickle down that went through the Manurewa Marae? I mean, you know, these allegations in regards to them funding these political candidates who, I mean, it looks to me that if you were on the board of that marae, say, that's a good wicket to be on, and they're still holding charity status. I'd love to see that marae stripped of its charity status just as they stripped Family First a few years back. That would set a cat amongst the pigeons, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think the answer in terms of the trickle-down is there's not a trickle-down in a rangatiratanga system. The tutua live at the pleasure of the chiefs, and it's right and fit. And you know, that comes back to, again, John Tamihere saying, you're not going to be ruling these people in 10 years. We're going to be ruling them. It's kind of like, oh, that's presumptuous, John. Maybe they don't want to be ruled by you. You know, there's in Toi Tu Te Kupu by Te Hamua Nikora, who's, of course, you know, you recognize Nikora as a fine East Coast name. Yep. But he has a little column on Māori language. That kind of thing is connective. It is engaging. As I've said before, you know, the people who teach you the most language are Māori friends, and they're very generous. They're very careful in the way they explain things. But I found that having that militant ethno-nationalist, we're coming to take over everything, it's a bit of a turnoff. When I was back in Gisborne the weekend before last, I met up with a couple of Māori mates, different things. And I said, man, it's good to sit and have a chat because, you know, all I see is just whining on TV. Just you fellas are never happy with anything. And, you know, they know it too. It embarrasses them. You know, that anytime there's a Māori on TV, they're always talking about how everything bad that happens to them is someone else's fault.
So speaking of someone else's fault, let's then segue across to the police, because there's some changes there. There has now been an initiative to get more beat police 24/7 in major cities to sort of curb some of that crime. But there is lots of you reap what you shall sow that has come down from Cuddles himself. And I know that you've been following that as a story, but also talking to people behind the scenes on this.
Yeah, I had a very long conversation the other day with a retired police officer who'd, I won't say anything that might identify him, because I haven't, you know, haven't told him that I'd talk about it. But he was a senior police officer who was involved in a lot of dealing with a lot of gang activity in Auckland, let's say, and he had left because of Cuddles Costa. You know, he was a two-fisted kind of police officer who, you know, was happy to engage with gang members physically if they resisted arrest. He said that they'd received a directive that if there was ever a call out where there was any sort of domestic issue, they had to send a car. There was no judgment to be exercised in it. And he said that that just tied up resources to the extent that the gangs just went nuts, and they were having to ignore absolute scumbag activity to go and attend an argument between a couple who were having such arguments three or four times a week. And by the time they got there, they were just sitting watching TV and, oh, were we? Oh, did we? And it says in this story in the Sunday Star Times, it said, police data shows foot patrols are already on the rise. Last year, in the 5 months to May, there were 17,440 foot patrols nationwide. For the same time this year, that had increased to 20,654, an increase of 18.4%. Police attendance at family harm or violence events fell over the same period from 65,057 over the first 5 months of last year down 6.7% to 60,698 for the first 5 months of the year. Call takers make an assessment about whether someone has been or could be harmed, family history, whether a phone call is enough, or if another agency might be better equipped to deal with the situation. So if you read between the lines of that, prior to that, the policy was, it doesn't matter. Any of that doesn't matter. Mm. You just go and turn up. And it was a massive, according to this guy, massive waste of police resources.
Yeah, and they also talked about, too, that if you went to one and it was like a mental health situation, you then would have to take the person to the emergency room. And, of course, the emergency rooms are all choked up and you had to wait like for hours sometimes before you could hand that patient over to mental health services. And, of course, that takes that one or two officers out of commission. Well,
takes them out.
Yeah. And then, of course, but the trouble with that is, are there going to be the social supports and the mental health support to deal with those issues, because we know that the area of mental health has been woefully underfunded.
Well, I mean, it got $1 billion spent on it, but it's been woefully underresulted.
Yes, true. Woefully, yes.
I remember talking to a cop who this was in Gisborne after there were some really nasty murder suicides, and people were becoming more aware of, you know, the woeful rates of domestic violence that we were having. I remember talking to a policeman about just going and seeing some of these couples who were just always fighting, just dropping in on them now and then. And he said that it was amazing the results that got, you know, because you weren't seeing them in the heat of the moment. You were seeing them just making a cup of tea and, you know, just because most of the time they're not like that. It's just now and then things flash up. And he said, you know, just sitting down with them and talking about, you know, maybe try not to, you know, drink so much and get into fist fights.
But it also comes back to that degradation of communities, isn't it? Like, you and I remember when we grew up, and particularly in the tiny little village where I hark from and your family harks from. And when we say tiny village people, we mean tiny village. Back in those days, there was a pub, a dairy, a gas station, the Ministry of Works, a church, and the mercantile store and the school. That was pretty much it in this tiny little place where I grew up, and your grandparents were. And they always had a community cop there. And it doesn't matter, every single little place, whether around the coast, even in larger towns or cities, there were little small community stations and hubs. And the officers that were stationed there knew the community, and they knew who could be a little bit free with fists if they'd had a few drinks at the pub and then came home early, or those who had a tendency to think that they were okay to drive home when they weren't really. You know, they knew these people. They understood them. It's like old school GPs. They knew the community they were living in. Those stations were routinely shut down through the 90s.
Yeah. And also the cops who were, because you need to be a certain type of cop to do that, brave, because it would be scary sometimes.
And by yourself, you're it.
Yeah,
there are station some, of one.
Yeah, there are some men like this guy I was talking to, like a few of my good friends, are physically brave. They don't mind. In fact, maybe they quite enjoy the odd ruck. And if your management doesn't have your back, if, you know, someone takes a swing at you and you take a swing at them, if it's going to result in discipline against you, you're going to lose all those guys. And once you lose all those guys, you're going to be left with people like the ladies in Trump's Secret Service detail, just freaking out, swivel-eyed, worrying about their hair, unable to put their pistols back in their holsters because they're not up to snuff with it. You need a certain type of person. And ideally, in a civilized society, the police are above criminals and below law-abiding citizens. But in a nation that's veering towards authoritarianism, the police see themselves as above citizenry as well. And that's, again, listen to Cam Slater's last crunch talking with the president of the Firearms Owners Association. Very, very interesting.
Mm. I'm pleased to see that they are putting more police on the beat in those major centres. I think that that is the right thing to do. And the reason I say that is there were very slim pickings in paper this weekend, everybody, by the way. One of the things that I did see was an article, and it came out of the Telegraph, around what happens to a city when you let liberalisation go wild and how quickly it can degradate. And that is the story of Vancouver. And Vancouver has often been the jewel of the Canadian West Coast. It's a place that I know many Kiwis love to go, and you can fly. We've been able to fly in direct there, and it's a beautiful city. Well, within 3 years of extreme liberal law and order and the decriminalisation of hard drugs, so one single thing, that this policy that they've enacted, the city has just fallen into an absolute cesspit of drug overdoses and crime. And they're now faced to having to roll it back. They're not completely getting rid of it, but they're trying to sort of bring back some law and order to the city. And it is it's not working. And it just shows you, you reap what you sow. And it's a social experiment that has gone drastically, drastically wrong.
Yeah. The whole thing in the States with fentanyl in particular is horrifying. I think something to watch in the media is they're having to walk things back. You know, there's an article about the islands that failed to vanish, which was actually from July the 6th. So it was on the Saturday before last's papers. So having to acknowledge, hey, you know, we've run headline after headline about what's going to happen, how, you know, coastal areas are going to be inundated and managed retreat and blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of like, actually, sea levels have barely changed. You know, having to write that, it's hard to overstate what a major turnaround that, and how much more turning around they've got to go.
Well, it's like that editorial too that I said about the 40,000 households in New Zealand that can't afford power, so they get it cut off. And they were talking about the importance of making power affordable in this country, and that all these power companies are making these massive profits, and yet, you know, 40,000 homes are without power because they can't afford. And yet not once in that editorial did they talk about the cost of renewables.
Yeah, or the unreliability of it. Mm. And, you know, we've seen them pivot from, you know, Biden's a statesman and he's sharp as a tack, you know, when the cameras are off and he's not reading from a teleprompter, to, yeah, he's got dementia. Yeah, he basically has got oatmeal for brains. And, you know, there was another article about the ladies, for they are overwhelmingly ladies in Spain protesting tourism. It's actually, it's a Times article talking about fears they are damaging the country's 100 billion euro, New Zealand, 178 billion a year tourism industry. And it just quotes the Jorge Marical, the head of the Spanish Confederation of Hotels and Tourist Accommodation, said the protesters were not very intelligent. I think that's a common factor with a lot of these people protest, you know, the kids protesting for the end of oil and the end of fossil fuels. It's like, be careful what you wish for.
Mm.
You've got no idea. And yet we've had to endure years and years and years of unquestioning, okay, yeah, these kids, you know, are saving the environment.
Mm. Well, we've still got a lot to look out for over the next little bit. We need to see whether or not Keir Starmer decides to do a Jacinda with the mandate that he's been given with all the extra seats, what's going to transpire there. Will the French get their shit together and actually finally cobble together some form of coalition? I mean, we don't know whether that's going to go on. And, you know, will we have new presidential candidates in the United States, and will they all live and survive to get to the election? These are all questions that we've got to look forward to over coming weeks and months, Marty.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting time. And as I said, it's been so great to be back on X and to be, I mean, it's interesting, Elon Musk tweeting various things. I mean, one of the most interesting has been that he was offered money by the European Commission to censor content, and everyone but him had accepted such payments. Facebook had accepted it and censored content. And, you know, all of this comes ultimately from the glob, you know, that military-industrial complex in America that has been censoring the internet using AI since 2017 and curating what you hear about in news. And so thing that I worry about is how dangerous these powers that go largely unnoticed by most people, watching Pauti Gower tell them about the world, what they do now, they're cornered, and now the tide's going out on them. It's when they're at the most dangerous. That's something to watch for, and especially watch how our own politicians and media are framing it.
Well, also too, watch for what I think is the renaissance of the Fourth Estate, and the renaissance of the Fourth Estate is an independent media, which is why we're doing what we're doing, and I hope you're enjoying it. 2057 is the text number. inbox@realitycheck.radio is the email if you've got any comments, and we'll keep doing what we're doing because no one else is doing it, particularly in this country, and I think that we need to just give you our thoughts so you can dig things out yourselves and hopefully encourage other people along to listen, because there is some really good content out there. And if you've got people that are a little bit wobbly on things, or people who are interested in politics and you want to introduce them into stuff. That's why I love that Crunch interview with Matt McCartan. You know, he's somebody that if you sit on that side of politics, you can listen to and understand and enjoy. There's some really great stuff there. So as always, Marty, I appreciate your time this morning.
Yeah, well, sorry if we're a little bit rusty. Hopefully the analysis will be a little bit more razor sharp next week. And there'll be plenty to talk about, as you say. So have a great week, everyone. Thanks, Marie.
Yeah, thanks, Martin. Don't disappear. Of course, a little more feedback to come before we hand over to Natalie Cutler-Welch with Up Your Brave here on Reality Check Radio.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.